2008 seminar series, lecture 13, and here we go. Stem cells happily adjust to my new self-image. What is my new self-image? What new self-image do I have of myself? Do I have a new self-image of myself that says that I have confidence in myself, I believe in myself? When I speak my word, all things happen in perfect divine order. Is that how it works? It should. Now, do you have that kind of confidence in yourself? Do you have that kind of confidence in everything you say? Can you be like the centurion who said to Jesus, "Tell me what I would do, and I will tell my I will command my servant to do it, and he will do it, because I am a leader of men, and I tell people what to do. I am a centurion, and I have followers, and I have soldiers, and they go into battle for me. They give up their lives for me. They do anything I ask them to do, because they know I go with them, and I am a good leader. I'm a good leader." Now, what kind of leader are we? Are we a good leader who people will follow us and people will do what we ask them to do and people will listen to us and think that we're confident? Okay, now, Grace over here is shaking her head yes, and she's saying yes. All right, Grace, you are a leader. See, already she knows that. Hmm? And you have a battalion at your beck and call. What is the battalion made up of?
The workforce.
Huh?
The
battalion is made up of your white stem cells. Your 10,000 white stem cells of your brain ready to go to work when you say, "Do it." Now, are you ready to lead them?
Yes.
Okay. Now, Grace, what do you tell these beautiful white stem cells that are in your brain, ready to go to work for you? What do you tell them?
I tell them what I want them to do.
You tell them what you want them to do. Now comes the hard question. Do you know what you want them to do?
Yes.
All right. What do you want them to do?
When I have decisions to take, I have alternatives. I ask them to tell the best alternative to take.
You ask them to be the best they can and do it.
Yeah. Give me the best.
Huh? It's interesting. But if I were working for you, I wouldn't know what to do. Now, anybody else want to know what they want to tell? Yes, what would you tell your things?
I know that I know.
Yeah? Somebody wants attention here. What would you tell them?
I'll tell them to regenerate every part of my body, cell to cell.
Oh, you know what you want.
I come out brand new.
You know what you want, huh?
Yes, yes.
You know what you want.
Yes.
Not bad. Now, what do you think his cells are going to do? Come on now. His cells are going to regenerate his body, and his body's going to come out all new, right? Is that what his cells are going to do?
Yes.
Super. That's true. Now, what are her cells going to do? They have no idea. They have no idea because she hasn't given them anything specific to do. Now, you can say to yourselves, "Okay, guys, I want you to go throughout my entire body, or I want you to go out through my brain, and I want you to illumine every cell of my brain with its original purity and integrity," or something like that, you know. I mean, you have to know what you want to do with a team that you're putting to work. Now, if you just say, "I'm whole and perfect," that's good. That's you and God working together. That's good. Or just God working together. But when you're dealing with some exterior type of thing, as a stem cells, whether they're mental or whether they're physical, you have to sort of have a mental idea what they're going to do. Now, when you tell your son to go to his room, what do you want him to do? Stop in front of the television? You want him to go to his room, right? You say, "Chidri, go to your room." And what does he do? What does he do? What does Chidri do when you tell him to go to his room? Does he go to his room? What's this arm waving about? Does he go to his room? Does he go to his room when you tell him to go to his room?
Yes.
Yes? Not all the time, though, huh? Yeah. What kind of a mother are you? Are you sort of a half-baked mother who gives commands and sometimes they're followed and sometimes they're not? You want to be all the time have him followed. Now, why does he not do immediately what you tell him to do? Because you don't expect him to. You say, sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he's got a mind of his own. Now, are you helping him by allowing him to have a mind of his own while he's growing up to be a man? No. How do you help him best? By teaching him discipline so he can learn self-discipline and discipline himself. And if you don't require this of him, he won't do it. Now, when you say, Jerry, please go to your room, and he'll go, here I am, you know, me, the head of the monastery. And in our discussion sometimes in the monastery, the girls get a little bit heated, and they start saying things they don't want me to say, because that's easy to do, you know. And I say, please stop that. And if they don't stop, you know what I do? What do I do? Tell me what I do.
You send them out.
I tell them to go to their room. I say, go to your room. If you don't know how to behave, go to your room. I mean, here they are, mature people, mature adults. And I say, go to your room. And they don't want to. And occasionally, before they go to their room, they'll stop and go to the bathroom first or do this first. I say, no, 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 no. You go directly to your room. No sidetrack. Not your decision, but my decision. I am the master of you, telling you to go to your room. And you go to your room, or else you get out of here. Why am I here except to be your parent or to be your teacher or to be something, you know? And if you don't want to behave and follow what the rules are, get out of here. I don't want you anywhere around here. You understand? No, that's hard. It's hard on me, it's hard on them. And pretty soon they get the idea that I'm serious. And they go to their room. And then they're in their room for 10 minutes or whatever. And I say, okay, come on out. You know? And they say, oh, so quick. And I say, all right, now. And I go back to what we were talking about before. And I bring it up again. And I say, now, are you ready? Are you ready to do as you're asked when you're asked? Yes, 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 yes. You know? And then they do it. But even adults who should have learned discipline when they were in your childhood, you know, didn't. Because they were not encouraged to do that by their parent. Now, you don't make him love you any less because you have discipline. He loves you all the more because you are disciplined. He can depend on you. He knows you're going to be there if you say you'll be there. He knows when you ask him to do something, he really has to do it. That's not a request. That's a demand. And he does it. It's not ugly. It's not ugly. What if Sam had... what's your other son's name that is here?
Andrew?
Andrew. Now, what if Andrew came into the living room here and he was sitting here and having us hear our talk, and then all of a sudden he decided to go potty, you know? And he goes potty right here in the living room. What would Daddy say to him? Daddy would say, Andrew, go in the bathroom. He wouldn't get angry at him for what he's doing. He's just getting angry at him for where he's doing it. He said, Andrew, go in the bathroom. That's where we do that. Go in the bathroom. Now, Andrew could be 2 years old, 10 years old, 20 years old, 50 years old. And if he disobeys Daddy's rules, what happens? Does Daddy love him any less?
No.
No. Is Andrew a better person because he knows how to do potty in the bathroom rather than in the living room?
Yes.
He's more appreciated by everybody, you know, because he follows the rule of society. Now, that's the same with Jitterby. If you can teach him to follow your rules, and make your rules not so hard or so often, but definite. And he knows that they're to be followed. And then he'll follow them. Now, just a minute, Grace, before you start right down there. Do you think your wonderful 10,000 stem cells are going to listen to you if your own son doesn't listen to you instantly? See, now the centurion's shoulder, he had authority and he exercised it properly and it was followed. And what did Jesus say of him? Nowhere in all of Israel have I seen anyone with such belief. And this is how you want to be. That's how I want you to be. I want you to be, nowhere in all the world has any woman ever had such loving authority over her world, which are your 10,000 stem cells, plus all the rest of them in your body, and your kid, and anybody else. And your men. You have men in your world, and women, and these, and your employees, and the men in your world who come up and expect things of you that you are not interested in participating in. You just say, please, we'll go dancing, but that's it, you know, or whatever you say. You understand? You have to have your foot down wherever you want it. Otherwise, you're nothing. So if you're going to tell your stem cells what to do, you have to tell them what to do. You have to know what you expect. Now, what do you expect from your stem cells? Come. You.
To continually regenerate my body. Every cell, every tissue, every organ.
Super.
To brand new.
Doesn't that sound nice? Would you like that too? Yes, it's done.
Yes.
It's done. Yeah. Would you like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the type of answer you want to give yourself. Because you're smart. You're real smart. Don't feel sorry for yourself, but you're real smart. And you're a brilliant lady, and you can order around your bank, you can order around your world, but you find it difficult to order around someone you so deeply love like your son. And he's the one who needs it more than anything else. Because when he has discipline, his whole world is going to be his oyster. He can do anything he wants when he has discipline. And with self-discipline, stem cells happily adjust to the new image of myself. And the new image of myself is, I am the master of myself. I am self-disciplined. And because I'm self-disciplined, I can accomplish anything that I want to accomplish, right? I can accomplish anything I want to accomplish. So now, let's put that in motion. Let's put that in motion. Now, a lot of you, and some who are not here, wanted to attend this seminar because they felt it was so good. But you came in and you attended a day here, a day there, an hour here, an hour there. And what happened? The show went by without you. And a lot of beautiful things were shared and you didn't hear them. And then you say, well, you wanted to get it from somewhere. And so you go to Peter and you say, Peter, I understand that you're going to make a copy of all these seminar tapes and so forth, and you're going to put them on a disc, and you're going to make it available to everybody. Ho, ho, ho. And Peter says, sure, sure. And so the people who didn't attend all of the programs, they come. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and in all honesty, answer it, and it doesn't bother me at all. Do you think they're going to listen to all those tapes? 18 hours of lectures plus, what is it, 3 hours of three sixes, or 18 hours of the 3 hour meditation, and what is that, seven hours of discussion, you know? This is like 8 hours a day of activity. And if you're not here and you hear it later, it's interesting and it's good. But if you're here and you hear it, and then you hear it again, it's wonderful. But if you're not here and you hear it, you don't hear it consecutively, you miss a lot of the building up points. And that's what all this stuff is. It's a matter of building up points, building up confidence. How do you make a souffle out of your three eggs? With a dash of vinegar, huh?
We do it fine.
Right? You take the eggs and you beat them up and you put a dash of vinegar in there and you make it all fluffy, right?
Sometimes we
are. I'm sorry?
Sometimes they send discs. We record them.
I'm talking about the eggs.
Okay.
I'm talking about that as a specific illustration. Now, the specific illustration is, if you have eggs and you'd like them to be fluffy, you add a teaspoon or two of vinegar to it, and that will cause it to build. Just like when you bake bread, what do you put in this?
Yeast.
Yeast. Yeah, you put yeast in. If you don't put yeast in the bread, what happens? It's Jewish bread, isn't it?
Yes.
You know what Jewish bread is?
No yeast.
Unleavened bread.
Yeah.
And it's hard, like a rock. You know, it's tough eating. You gotta have good teeth. But when you want to make the eggs, okay, when you want to make, now let's not have several conversations going on here at once. When you want to make the eggs and you want to make them fluffy, we learn the recipe. Now, if you didn't hear the total story of how it went along, you would miss that. You wouldn't get the understanding of how this went along. And you would miss the point of how to fix the egg. Now, it's a simple little thing, but it's a big thing. Now, why is Grace now going to change her modus operandi with her son? Why is Grace going to discipline her son? She wants him to learn discipline. So she teaches him discipline. You want to learn discipline, so you discipline yourself. And when you discipline yourself, you can do anything. If you don't discipline yourself, you can't do anything. All right? What did I say in the talk this morning about how do you go and approach a successful man and ask him how he has become so successful? What is the primary thing that you do?
You praise him on his achievements.
You praise him?
Yeah, on his achievement, on his work.
No.
You must know what he's doing.
You know what he's doing, you know his business, and then you praise him. But first you know his business so he knows that you're not praising him off the top and you don't know anything. But first you are disciplined to know what his business is. You know what his stock report is. You know the things that he's accomplishing. And you know what his product is, you know. And when you know these things, then you can go talk to him and he'll think that he's not talking to some dum-dum. But if you don't indicate that you know these things, he'll think, hey, in one ear, out the others. I've talked to many people who wanted to know about my success and they weren't ready to hear it. They were not disciplined and ready to hear it. So when you go there and you tell him that I've seen your stocks and I just am amazed by your business, how can you have it be so successful? He'll say, well, it's easy. I have principle. You know, I live on principle. And you say, well, super, but how do you apply it? And tell me. You see, this morning we discussed that, and it goes in one ear and out the other, but now we're finding that it has some bearing as we're working with our stem cells. Now I'm going to give you another point of view that you haven't had before. How stem cells affect sickness. Okay? How can you talk to your stem cells? How can you talk to your stem cells? Your stem cells are fantastic. They are undifferentiated. They are pure and beautiful. Can you talk to your stem cells with a dirty face? Can you talk to your stem cells without using the King's English? Can you talk to stem cells without communicating to the stem cells in the vocabulary that they have of what you're talking about? If you go to a stem cell and you start talking gibberish, they're not going to pay any attention to you because you are not paying attention to you. You know what your language is. You know how you communicate. Now, as Sam was saying a minute ago, you can communicate by thought. You can communicate by just thinking your thought and the stem cells will instantly respond to what you do. But you have to listen to what you're saying, because if your thought is, I can't, or if your thought is, I don't know, or your thought is, I wish, the stem cells are going to not know what to do. They just don't know what to do. They need a direct command, and they need a direct statement of what you expect of them. Now, how do stem cells affect sickness? What does a stem cell do about sickness?
They don't recognize sickness.
It what?
They do not recognize sickness.
They do not recognize it.
Yes.
Yes. Stem cell does not recognize sickness. A stem cell can recognize sickness if that's what you tell it to do. You say, go join the sickness crowd. And stem cell says, okay. So he jumps in with those other cells that are in the sickness mode, and he's sick. Now, what if you tell the stem cell, go in and return all my cells to the original purity and integrity? What would happen to the sickness? Be gone. Be gone. Because it's not going to get any attention. It's not going to get any direction, and it'll be gone. Now, can you do that? Can you speak to your stem cells and say, I expect you to bring your entire entourage of wholeness and perfection in there, and it's done. Now, how long does it take for the healing to do? Instantaneous. It's done before you begin. Because first you have to think the thought. And when you think the thought, it's done. Absolutely done. I'm sick. You think the thought, it's done. You know? Sounds terrible, doesn't it? You think the thought, and you're sick, and you're sick. Well, I am thinking the thought that I'm sick because I'm sick. No, you're sick because you're thinking the thought that you're sick. You're not sick because you're not thinking the thought that you're sick because you're sick. You're sick because you're thinking the thought, but you're thinking the thought because you're sick, and you're putting the thought before the sickness. The thought always comes before the sickness, no matter how I word it here. The thought always comes before the sickness. What kind of thoughts do you have in your head? What kind of banker are you? The best, right?
Best.
My God, number one.
Number one.
Number one. What kind of bank are you working for? A lucky bank? What kind of bank are you working for?
Number one bank.
Oh, number one bank. Oh, boy, oh, boy. What's that?
Microfinance Bank.
Yeah, you can put the name on. I'm not interested. But you know that the bank is number one. You know the bank is number one. And you know that there's not another bank in the world equal to your bank. Because you work there. And what kind of employees do you have in your bank?
The best.
The best. You have number one employees. And what do those employees do for the patients, to the customers who come into the bank? Each employee sees in the customer what they are themselves. They are number one, so they see the customers as number one. And what do the customers think of that? They like that, don't they? They like to be number one. You go into different establishments and they make you wait and they treat you like number two and they have you wait. They say that he'll see you soon, he'll see you soon. You know, and pretty soon you say, I'm going over to Grace's bank. They see me right away. Even if they have a crowd, they see me right away. They bring over the dancing girls, and they bring over the cocktails, and they bring over the tea, and they excuse me, and they see me right away. Nice, huh? Isn't that what it's all about? They see you right away. Okay. Now, this is what you want to do. Your stem cells are waiting for your response. So what response do you give to your stem cells? You're whole and perfect. The stem cell says, I know I'm whole and perfect. But what do you want me to do? What work you got for me to do? Hey, Mom, what do you want me to do?
Return me to my original purity and
integrity. Return me to my original purity and integrity. Super! You like that, Sam? Yeah, super. Emmanuel, you like that?
Yes.
Yes. I got to write this down so I don't forget it. Yes. Yes. Return me to my original purity and integrity. Okay, now, what does Ethelbert do about that? What does he do? He's a sharpie, you know. He's on top of everything. What does he do? What does he say? He says to his stem cells, hey guys, go down and join the rest of them in my whole and perfect body. Go down and join the rest of them, or go up and join the rest of them in my whole and perfect body. He sees it as already done. Can you see it as already done?
Yes.
Yeah. Are you going to see it as already done? Yeah. Is your angel already done? Is she already a magnificent being? Is she already perfect in every way? She agrees. She agrees. Whole and perfect. Absolutely fantastic. And this is what it's all about. And this is what you and I are all about. Now, the reason I bring this up, Ethelbert, the reason I bring it up is that when do you want to demonstrate these truths? They're already done. They're already done. When do you want to demonstrate them? They're already done. You see, and if you live in the attitude that they're already done, then they're already done. If you live in the attitude that it is to be done, you know, go down and work on it. Take stem cells, go in there and bring it back to the original purity and integrity. That's good. That's good for our starting thinking, because then we start playing the game. Now, what's the next step of the game?
If it's a situation that they are done.
Make the decision that they're done. Now, what games do you play? Do you play soccer or volleyball, or what do you play? Cricket?
Table tennis, lawn tennis.
Huh?
Table tennis, lawn tennis.
Lawn tennis.
Lawn tennis. Okay, you play lawn tennis. Now, when you play lawn tennis, I believe that's with the club, and they take the ball and you nick it and it goes someplace, right? You bump the ball into the places you want to go.
Yeah.
Okay. What's that, please?
You direct the ball.
You direct the ball into where you want to go. Okay, so you want the ball to go over here to this wicket. And so you hit it this way. And it doesn't go to the wicket you want it to go to. And you say, oh, damn, it didn't go to where I wanted to go. And because you didn't aim it that way. Now, what does his name on the golf team, the great golfer, Tiger Woods. See, pronouncing it correctly helps a lot for me. Tiger Woods. Now, what does Tiger Woods do? Does he aim in the wrong direction to go to where he wants to go?
He sees the ball, right?
He what?
He sees the ball, right?
It's like the ball. But where does he see it? But no, where does he see it? He sees it where he wants it to go. Oh, sure, it was his mind. But how does the ball get to where he wants it to go? He sees it there. He doesn't. Before he hits the club, he knows where that ball's going to go. And Tiger Woods is really a monster. He is. He's a monster. He is about the worst guy in the world. And he's the worst guy in the world because he is playing the game that people want him to play. If Tiger Woods would play golf like he knows how to play, he would be totally uninteresting to watch. Can you imagine watching Tiger Woods playing golf, teeing off, having the ball fly in the air, maybe dance around a little bit, and then land in the hole, a hole in one on every shot? How boring, you know? How boring. So he makes it not boring by puts it, and then he goes, oh darn, and he acts as though he's upset, and he's not upset. He chose to put it there in the grass, in the rough. He chose to put it in the sand pit. He chose to put it in the water. He even gets in the water and flicks it out of the water, which is rather difficult to do. But he is good. But you see, Tiger Woods is not interesting as Tiger Woods, the perfect man. Because the audience that is watching is not perfect. They want to see him make a mistake. They want to see him work his way up to the green. And so he's getting paid big bucks for working his way up to the screen, at the green, and he doesn't need to do that. He doesn't need to do that at all, because he is good, and he's very good. And you are good, and you are very good. You can see whatever you want done. That's right. You can see whatever you want done, and you can speak your word, and it is done for you immediately. And then other people come and say, oh, how can you do that? How can you do that? You know, you're not supposed to be able to do that. You got to go step to get there. And you say, I'm sorry, I didn't know. You know, how would it be if you take your kid or yourself and go out to the golf course, and you take a golf club and you take the ball and you knock it in the green, knock it in the hole, and you do it again and again and again and get around again and again and again. And the game's not interesting. Not interesting. You don't want to play chess with somebody who can beat you every time. You want to play too and win once in a while.
Yeah. Yes.
And yes. And the same with checkers and chess and all these games. You want to win too once in a while. And when you play with children, you let them win now and then, or else the children won't be interested in learning the game. Because what did I say it was? A game. Why is it a game? It's a game of your son saying he's not going to go to his room when you tell him to the first time. Your son standing up saying, chip, 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 you know, and showing his oats. But the thing is, that's a game. Now, you're playing in that game too. And your role in that game is to make sure that he does what you say, not what he says. Later on, when he has his own family, he can say what he says. You understand? Later on, when children have their own families, they can go out and treat them however they will. But they will treat them just like they were. And if they were taught discipline, if they were taught to behave, if they were taught to handle their clothes nicely. How many of your kids put their clothes away nicely when they take them off? Or just drop them on the floor? What?
None.
None. That's right, none. And what a shame. Is your floor immaculately clean in every room of your house? No. There's dust there. There's footprints there. And when they drop their clothes, they get on that dusty floor. And sometimes they drop them outside. They don't care. They don't respect their clothing because you don't respect it. So what you do is you go outside and you say, "Oh, Jerry, come here. Look what I found. I found this beautiful jacket. I wonder who it belongs to. It's mine. Well, what's it doing out here in the dirt? It's mine. Well, what's it doing out here in the dirt? You have a nice closet in your bedroom that you can hang it in. You have a nice place where you can put it. Now, should we throw it in the trash? The trash can's over here. Let's go throw it in the trash. Because whoever owned it doesn't want it. They just leave it out here. No, 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 no. You know. And you say, I have to pay for that. I can't throw that in the trash. I got to pay for that. You can throw it in the trash. It's a lot cheaper than a lot of arguing. And you just take him along and say, "Son, since you don't want this hanging in your closet, and you don't want it to be for you, you want me to wash it, you want me to take care of it, but you don't take care of it. So we'll throw it in the trash." "But Mom, you've got to buy me a new one." "Oh, no, I don't. You go to school naked. I don't care. You know, if you don't want to take care of your clothes, that's just too bad." Now, do you think he will learn very quickly how to take care of his clothes? Now, I'm using him as an example because I know his name, but I don't know all of your children's names. But equally, it's all of our children. My son was raised that same way, and he is terrible. He married a woman, first wife. She was clothes on the floor, and they walk all over their clothes, and I don't want to go in their house. I don't want to go in the house. Now he's married to a second wife, and he's almost the same way. Now, and is it the wife's fault or his fault or both their faults? What a shame, you know? What a shame. His mother and I are very clean persons. We put things away, we carefully iron things and fold things, and we like to put things in a proper place. And why didn't he? Because somewhere along the line, the discipline wasn't done. I can't take credit for disciplining him because I wasn't home. And my wife couldn't take credit for disciplining him because she wasn't always home. Now, he ended up the loser. What a shame, you know? Now, if I had really loved him, I would have not gone to a lot of meetings that I went to, and I would have spent time with him and worked with him on respecting and loving himself and respecting and loving his clothes. But he's a genius. He's an absolute genius. But he could have been an absolute genius in many, many more ways. You understand? Now, it's true, your children could have a little more discipline too. All children can. But what are we going to do about it? I'm telling you, all of you, whether you like it or not, this seminar has made parents out of all of you. All of you. Her too. Made parents out of all of you, of your stem cells. You are the parent of your stem cell. Now, what is your stem cell going to do? What is your stem cell going to do? Is your stem cell going to do what you want it to do? Or is it... I know, it should do it, because you tell it to do it. And if your stem cell is going to do what you want it to do, you must know what you want it to do. And you don't just want it to be a generic type of thing. You know, I'm happy, I'm joyful, which is good. But it's specifics. The generic is who you are. Are you a happy person? Are you a beautiful person? Are you a person that you love and that the world loves? If so, then that's what your stem cells are. But that's not the end of the story. That's the beginning. Now, the next step is, are you going to discipline your son to put his clothes away, to go to his room when he's told to? Are you going to discipline your stem cells as to what? Now, they don't need to be, you stem cells do this. You know what the stem cells say? Your wish is my command. We are pliant. We are compliant. We are willing to do whatever you wish us to do. Just tell me what to do. Dad, I want to go play. What can I do? Mom, what's there to do around here to play? Mom, what's there? You know what Mom could say to the kids there to do around here to play? Well, I tell you, I play a nice game every day in cleaning the house. Now, would you like to play that game with me? Sure. What do we do? Starting out young. Sure, what do we do? Well, first, we take the little dustpan and we go around in all the corners and we take the dust out of the corners and we sweep it on the dustpan. And we go across the room and go through all the little grouting of the tile and we sweep it out and get it out real nice and clean. On your knees? Sure, that's what's fun. And then you have a damp cloth there to make sure it's all picked up nice and beautiful and nice. And then you go over the whole floor. But Mom, that takes a while. Yeah, that's why house cleaning is so much fun. It takes a little while if you do it right. And then, you know what we do? Then you know what we do? We take our brand new coat, our brand new suit, and we put it on the floor. Our brand new suit. What do you mean brand new suit? Wax. We take a coat of wax and we put it all over the floor. Why do you put a coat of wax on there? It just has to be cleaned off again. I put a coat of wax on it because I love that floor and I want that floor to last forever. And I want that floor to look beautiful. When people come in here, I want people to look at that floor and say, wow, I can see my face in there. How nice, how great. And you see, what's happening? Mama, Daddy love their house, love their floor. They keep it beautifully clean. And they keep it waxed and beautifully shiny. And then, as they do that, the children love the floor. As they keep the house beautiful, the children keep the house beautiful. And when Mom says, hey, sweetheart, I left my shirt downstairs. I had too many things in my arm. Will you bring it up to me, please? Why? You say, because I asked you to. Come on, bring it up. So they bring it up, and you say, thank you very much. Now, sweetheart, I've got my arms full. Will you hang it in the closet for me? So you have them hang everything in the closet. Now make sure it doesn't too tight to anything else because it'll wrinkle again. And I want to keep it all nice and smooth the way I earned it. And teaching, teaching, teaching. But it's patience. To teach is patience. To go on teaching forever is pure love. And you have the patience to work with because you know what you're doing. You're exciting them about what you're doing, and you could do it in 2 seconds flat and it'd be done. And you could go out and do other things. But that's not your purpose. If you chose to be the parent of your children, then you chose to teach them all of the things that you know how to do beautifully. Now, are you worthy of having stem cells in your body? You don't have a choice. They're there. This family of stem cells is born in your body every single day, and you have treated it like dirt. You have not told it what to do. You have just said, go play with the rest of the kids. Go play with the rest of the kids. Go learn from the rest of the kids. Go do this, go do that. And you've had no attention to your stem cells. And then you wonder why your stem cells are not working on your behalf. Because you have no behalf on which for them to work. Silly, isn't it? So now, how do you have a behalf on which the stem cells work? You decide where you want to train them, what you want them to do. Can you be the centurion? Can you be the leader of that platoon of stem cells? You know? Can you direct them in the way you want them to go? and directing them in the way you want them to go, can you direct them to be whole and perfect? They're already whole and perfect. Really? If they get their feet dirty, if they get their little bottom stem cells dirty, the whole stem cell soon to follow being dirty, you got to walk them in the paths of purity. You got to have that waxed floor. And so you take these stem cells by the hand, so to speak, and you say, return my body to its original purity and integrity. Okay, where do you want us to start? I hadn't thought of starting. I want the whole thing done. Well, we start someplace. Let's start. Well, we'll start with the living room floor. We'll clean that first. First, we'll use the dust broom. First, we'll clean up the dust and get things done. Then we'll go on and on and on, step by step. Okay? How do the stem cells work on the body? Well, why did scientists learn about the 10,000 stem cells of the brain first? Because that's the primary place that you begin. So let's begin with our brain. That's where the primary stem cells are that we know about. So we say to these stem cells every day, 10,000, born there, we say, all right, stem cells, here's your task for today. I want your task to go in and purify every stem cell, purify every cell in my brain so that it is its original purity and integrity. Every cell in my brain, whether it's glands or anything else, whatever it is, right, left hemisphere, every cell in my brain is completely purified. And let's do the cranium too. That's this hard tube that it's in there. Let's purify that too. Let's clean that up and scrape it up real good. You know, like you have a coconut and you take a spoon in there and get the milk that's really good left in there. Well, let's clean that up really good. Really nice. Okay, now we're cleaning up our brain really nice. And the stem cells say, okay, but, if you want it like that, you have to do this every day. Every day? I thought you do it once and it's done. No. Because little cells that we hadn't noticed are just hiding out places, and they come out. Little cells that perhaps have gone down below into the rest of your body are popping up into the brain. Why? Why? Tell me why.
Memory.
I'm sorry?
Old memory. Old memory.
Yes, that's an area I wasn't covering, through memory. But I'm covering the physical thing through your bloodstream. Your bloodstream is going through your whole body every minute. And so it brings back these aspects of your body that are gross, the aspects of your body that are not pleasant, the aspects of your body that are sick cells, you know, like a sick foot or a sick brain or sexual disease or some other silly thing about yourself. And these things irritate you. And you say, and they come up and get into your brain again through your bloodstream, and you're mixing the old with the new. So you really have to get busy. Get busy. Now, you can take your stem cells, and I recommend you do this. You take your stem cells and use them as a gate for your brain. Use them as a filter for your brain so that nothing can come into your brain from anything in your blood unless it is filtered. And all of the negativity is filtered out and just goes along with the blood. It is never taken into the brain itself. And the brain, you know, has almost 90% of your blood. It's really amazing. So, as you do this, this takes a concerted effort unless you do it early. And the concerted effort is that you say to yourself, I return my entire body to its original purity and integrity. The cells, stem cells of my body, return my entire body to its original purity and integrity. Have you got the guts to say something like that?
Yes.
It takes a lot of personal fortitude to say something like that, because it's going to change all of you. It's going to change everything about you. Everything that you used to, that you got used to, like your crooked toe or your crooked nose or whatever, you know, you got used to it. You're sort of used to seeing it. And then all of a sudden it's not there anymore. You're returned to your original purity and integrity. And all of the imperfections, if you want to call them that, all of the things that are not your original purity and integrity, they're gone. Yeah, nice, huh? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Sybil is going to set up a special filtering process for your brains. And she's going to sell it for $30,000 an ounce. And it's available right after lunch. And if you want it, you put cash in the barrelhead. You got to have $30,000 to buy that 1 ounce. And I don't think you have to rush. But anyhow, if all of you had the opportunity to buy that ounce, and you had the money to buy that ounce, I don't mean that you were wealthy, but you just had the money to buy that ounce, how many of you would buy that ounce? And I would say none. None of you would buy that ounce because you don't really know what it means. You don't really know what it means to have your original purity and integrity throughout your entire body. Can you imagine thought? Right? Your mind, your memory.
Memory.
Memory. Can you imagine that your thought, in its original purity and integrity, does what, Sam? It is instantly done. It's instantly done. Your thought is instantly done when you are in your original purity and integrity. Your thought is instantly done. So, now, what kind of thoughts do you think as you are in your original purity and integrity? Do you think bad thoughts? No. They're not there. They're cleaned out too. Yeah, they're cleaned out too. And all that's left is your original purity and integrity. Now, what does your original purity and integrity do? It says, I think I'll go visit Sybil. And I happen to be down at Port Horicon. And so, what happens? Pop, there I am. I'm standing in front of Sybil. She says, what took you so long? You thought of coming, and then it took you half a second to get here. I knew what you're doing, because I'm everywhere too, you know. Now, you didn't have to come here. You could have just told me mentally what you wanted, and I would have told you mentally what to do. You know? And, well, I just like to be in your presence, Sybil. You know, being in your presence is like being in the presence of majesty. Well, that's just because I'm your reflection. Boo-de-boo-de-boo, you know? I'm your reflection. You don't need anybody else to be a beautiful experience in your life. Just be yourself. No. Yes. You're raising your finger or you're talking?
Raising my finger.
You have a question or a statement.
If we return to our original state of purity and integrity, so that whatever we may think is done instantly.
Yes.
Don't you think that we will now become like King Midas? That before whatever he touched became good, and it became a disadvantage. What I'm asking is this: who is in returning to our original purity and integrity? Don't we allow, in some instances, due process as part of the perfection? The due process of letting things happen, as we talked about in the discipline. Sometimes that kid may not do that thing. Or sometimes the ball will not go into the goal. Because if you continue to go into the goal at every instant, everything will. So at what point do we, you know, allow the new process?
The big thing is, what you're saying is valid if you are saying what you're saying and meaning what you're meaning. And I hope you're not meaning what you're meaning. What you are saying is that we can be bored with our genius right now and here, right? We can be bored with our ability to play chess because we're so good we beat everybody. We play golf and we beat everybody. We can be bored. Okay, now, let's take the step. Here we go into our original purity and integrity. Now, as our original purity throughout our body, our original purity and integrity, mental, spirit, mind, and body, the total picture. Do you think that in our original purity and integrity, there's any place for boredom?
No.
Do you think there's any place for wishing that we could do? You see, our human self has these ideas. And our original purity and integrity has no place for that. It doesn't exist there. And you and I cannot conceive of that because we're not experiencing it right now. But It's just not there. It's just not there. And when I was a child, I thought like a child. When I was a man, I thought like a man. So it was not there. And when it's not there, then it does not touch us. And so when we are original purity and integrity, we don't play games that have comparisons to it. We play games that are involvement in a total charisma, the total picture of something. It's hard to describe what one of that would be, but comparison is when you play golf and tennis and stuff like that, because you're always doing it, or when you're playing soccer or handball or whatever. These all are aspects of yourself, of what you're doing. Now, what is it that you're doing? When you're enjoying your original purity and integrity, there is no place for that. Now, if we were doing just the command for our brain and the rest of our body we hadn't gotten to yet, then yes, we would have that competition going on. Because the rest of our body would say, sure, you do it for the brain, but you don't do it for us too. Come on now, we want it too, you know. And, well, you got your own stem cells down there. Let them go to work. Well, someone's got to direct them. And, well, you direct them yourself. Well, I'm not mind, you're mind. I'm just complaint, that's all. I want you to make me whole and perfect, you know, just like the rest of us whole and perfect. So that's why, when, as you were saying, and you were each saying, to speak your word for your entire self. My body, my being, my essence, my allness, my spiritual reality is returned to its original purity and integrity. Because the stem cells are not only for the physical substance of ourself, the physical body. It's for our mental body. It's for our spiritual body. It's for all. What is your spiritual body? That's your awareness that you're God. Now, is that part of the game too? I think that's probably where it came from in the first place. That's probably where the game originated, right? In our awareness that we are God. And I tell you, that is a wonderful thing. But this is what we're doing, and this is how we're doing it, and we're just having all sorts of fun doing it. And thought and its power, happy thought, healthy thought, successful thought, bring about whatever we want. And self-image flows forth out of thought alone. Well, this is what we've come up with without realizing that we've come up with it. It comes out of thought alone. Self-image comes up out of thought alone. Now, Chitterby is not going to be a wonderful, dynamic, happy person because you tell him to be so. He's going to be a happy, dynamic, intelligent person because he tells himself so. Because he's brilliant. He's a genius like all of us. And he knows it a little bit, but not in every area. And when he starts telling himself that he's a genius in all these areas, what's going to happen to him? If his mother says to him, Chitterby, what does a genius do? I mean, you know all about that stuff. Tell me what a genius does. Does a genius take care of his school books? Oh, yeah. Does he throw them on the ground or does he walk on them and stuff? No. He respects them. Why does he respect them? Because the books are himself. That's what he's putting in his brain. It's good enough to go in his brain. It's good enough to go in his bookshelf, right? Yeah. And what does he do with his pencil and his ballpoint pens? Does he write on everything under the sun with them? No. He keeps them very precious for just one purpose. For working with his homework, his schoolwork. Now, everything should be precious. And then, here comes the kicker. And then, Grace says, Chitterby, who is the most prized person in this world other than yourself? And he'll say, my dog. No, he'll say, my mom. He'll say, my mom. My mother is the most prized person in the world. Well, now, what is the way that we should treat the most prized person in the world? How should we respect them? How should we go along? What purpose do I have in your life, Chitterby? Am I here just to wash your clothes and make your meals? Or am I here to help you understand who you are and realize that your body is the temple of the living God and that your mind is a wonderful, wonderful thing? And you see, as she takes that attitude, and it's a slow boat attitude, but as she takes that, it leaves an indelible print that never will be erased. A print that says, respect, respect, respect. And with respect, everything is beautiful, especially for Grace, but more for Chidori. I use him as an example because we got the names. Now, any one of you and your children can be the same way. You have your little angel here, starting out in this beautiful way. Is it going to be an expression of this ideal, original purity? Is it expressing its original purity and integrity? Always? Always? Is it a beautiful system? Does its alimentary system, defecation system work good? Oh, yes, very good. Does its urinary system work good? Oh, yes, very good. Does its intake work very good? Oh, yes. Does it talk very well? As we expect it to. Now, you, if you weren't so stupid, you would look at your child and say, Peace, I have been very bad to you. I have looked at you and treated you like a little person who does not know how to speak. But Peace, you know how to speak, and you have a vocabulary that doesn't stop. You have a beautiful vocabulary. Peace, you are wonderful. And then you speak to Peace in the King's English, or Queen's English. You speak to Peace in that perfect grammatical manner. You don't say, ba ba da da. They said, ba ma ba boo boo. You know, you don't do those things. That's not your kid. Your kid is of the new element, of the stem cell element. And the stem cells of your child are waiting to hear that it speaks perfect English. Look, you've read stories of kids who are 3 months old and doing marvelous things, playing the piano. And others who are like 2 years old and they're composing music, or Mozart writing at the age of three, composing music, playing the guitar, and as the violin and all those things. Magnificent, right? Now, why not here? You and your family and your husband are not what you call super intellectuals, but you're not stupid. But you do not encourage your kids to be intellectually astute. And so they're not. They're just normal, wonderful children. But they haven't been challenged to reach the high level of capacity that they have of their original purity and integrity. Do you, every day at the table, this food is healthy for my body and filled with love, do you say that I am my original purity and integrity? And they won't understand what it means, it doesn't have to, but they will, and you keep saying these things, it'll happen to you at the same time it happens to them. I don't know, is your husband likely to say that too? Yeah. But you see, this is a family affair. If your husband comes in and says, how's my little baby? And she says, Father, I wish you would speak to me correctly. Oh, are you my father, or are you someone who's not in this family, who doesn't have good grammar, who doesn't have good speech techniques? And he says, my God, I've been gone a week and look what's happening. We've grown a monster here. No, no, not a monster. We've grown an intellectual giant, which is what we are. Is there any reason that this little girl cannot, at the earliest age, speak perfectly, write perfectly, walk perfectly? Does she have to go through certain stages of walking? No. You will do it because that's habit. But when you expect her to walk, she's walking when you're not looking. She's walking when you're looking. She's doing all sorts of things when you're not looking. But the minute you look, she does what you expect her to do, because children are attuned into what the parents expect them to do, and they fulfill that. Interesting, isn't it? But that's the way it works. So now, what about the rest of your kids? What about the rest of you? Are you willing to speak the most beautiful grammar in the world? Would your friends appreciate you? Your friends that you have now would disappear, and new friends who would appreciate you would appear. Don't worry about doing things to keep friends. You don't do things to keep friends. You don't keep up with your friends by doing naughty things. That is not for your benefit or anybody else's. But as you live to the highest level of your consciousness, you got it made. Now, Michael, can you say to me in clear, wonderful English, I express my original purity and integrity now and always?
I express my original purity and integrity now and always.
And run it again.
I express my
original
purity and integrity now and always.
And again.
I express my original purity and integrity now and always.
Don't rush.
Right.
Again.
I express my original purity and integrity now and always.
Now the word original isn't coming through very clear. Do it again.
I express my original purity and integrity now and always.
Was that so difficult?
No.
You see, that is what you want to do. I don't care whether you speak English or French or whatever language, but whatever you speak, speak it perfectly. And English is the language of your country. And I recommend... I'm sorry?
It's a universal language.
It's a universal language, that too. That's a point in its favor. But I recommend that you all speak your English as precisely and clearly as the Queen does. And you can be sure that the Queen would like to be slovenly sometimes. Yeah, you know? But she doesn't dare. Because that's not her role. Her role is her original purity and integrity. And it's become a habit. So always the Queen speaks precisely and clearly. I go to every country in the world and I speak basically this language that I'm speaking to you. And it is a clear, precise English. And everyone I speak to basically understands me if they understand English at all. Because it's clear and precise. This is what you want to do with this little baby. You want peace to be speaking beautifully and clearly and precisely. And I understand that her parents like to sing. Well, she will certainly use singing as a very wonderful medium for expressing her genius. And you will too. This is what it's all about. You're fantastic. Yes, sir.
I have a dilemma.
Now you have a what?
Dilemma.
You have a dilemma.
It's hard for me to speak in my local language.
I have this dilemma, which is...
I can't speak very well in my local language.
Which one?
My dialect is difficult for me. I don't understand it very much.
Your local...
Dialect.
Your local dialect.
I don't understand them very much. So I always speak in English. And some of my friends, they resent it. Oh, Michael, you speak too much grammar. We don't want grammar. And I say, I am trained to speak in English. I love to use English very well. And they resent me for that. So what am I going to do? I can't resource that.
Now, you are a blind, stupid asshole. Did I just say 1 minute ago that when you speak perfect English, you will create friends who speak perfect English, and when you speak perfect English, those who are around you who do not speak perfect English will soon no longer be around you? Did I say that?
Yes.
Well, then why did you say what you just said? You just said, why did these people not understand me? Why don't they do what I do too? And hey, that's only the mind that's not listening. That's a brain that's not turned on. And your brain was not turned on when you asked that question. That's silly. I use the word asshole because it's got to be a little strong. But the thing is, that's not what you want to do. You are a brilliant man. And you don't want anyone to know it. And you're doing very well in hiding it. Now, I would like you to express your brilliance in your language so beautifully that everyone looks at you and says, wow, what a teacher, what a sharer, what a magnificent man. And I would like your children to look up to you and your wife and look up to you and say, oh, you are such a role model for us in perfect speech. What do you think of Princess Diana? Did you ever hear her speak? She spoke with the most beautiful diction, the most beautiful language, and she spoke with the courtly language, with the king's English. Beautiful. And what Prince Charles, have you ever heard him speak? Yuck. He speaks like he's sick, you know? And he's royal blood. Well, somewhere the blood got a little mixed up there, didn't it? Okay. Now, you see, if the king if the prince is not representing everything that the kingdom is supposed to represent, why do we have queens and kings? It's not because they run the country. It's because they are an image, a symbol. They are a role model for the country. They should be so absolutely perfect. They should not associate with anybody other than royalty and maintain that royal image. And pretty soon, if they did that, all of England would be imitating that royal road. But they forget their place. And you forget your place. You ask a question, and then you hear your answer. And that's not going to help you. If you ask the question, listen to the answer that's given to you, and then hear your answer. You know. So, I'm giving you all this wisdom and this knowledge and so forth, and I've only been around a short time, and so I want to share with you what I have. I'm not saying I am only around a short time. I have been only around a short time. I'm 25. And so, yes, I know. Isn't that wonderful to learn a little bit like that in those short years? But this is who you are. This is who you are. You are open sponges for all the wisdom of the universe. But you are not open sponges receiving it. You are open sponges squishing it out. It's in you and you're giving it out. Everything that exists is in you and you are merely giving it out. You are a genius, but you won't expect it. Now, Chitterby, is he a genius? Yes. Does he act like a jerk? Yes. Why does he act like a jerk? Because he's expected to act like a jerk. His mother expects him not to put his clothes away, so he doesn't do it. And you too, with your kids, you too with your family, you do the same thing. And your mother and dad did the same thing with you. They didn't expect you to do it. Oh, here, dear, let me do that. It's I can do it so much faster. Yeah, but you never learned to do it yourself.
Exactly.
To be a parent is a real lovely experience, because you, as a parent, would be unconditionally loving. I love my kid no matter how stupid they are, you know. Well, you don't want to say that. I love my kid no matter how brilliant they are. It's like the story of the teacher with the two classes, you know, one class was brilliant, one class was not. She expected the stupid class to be brilliant, and they were brilliant. They lived up to her expectation for them. And how wonderful. And that's true. That's true. There are many teachers who go into school who don't realize they got a bunch of stupid kids that they're teaching. And they teach those kids from their own brilliance, and those kids come out of their classes just naturally brilliant. They don't realize that the teacher did it to them, and they don't realize that they gave themselves to it because they didn't know that what she was doing. She didn't know what she was doing. She was just being herself and having fun. She was teaching what she taught. And you can teach what you teach. And isn't it wonderful? You know? Are you good?
Very good.
Why does Peter, this brilliant being, as soon as we conclude our program, want to have a question? Why doesn't he ask it during the program? Because he is like some of you who like to make your entrance late and come in and have everybody see your pretty dress or your pretty suit, you know. You want to come in late so everybody notices that you came. Well, he likes to leave early and come stay late and show off his beautiful brain and his beautiful questions. Don't stop asking them, okay?
Yeah.
Don't stop asking them. I'm just using you as an example that he likes to get attention. Little children like to get attention too. And we sometimes don't want to give them attention that they want. Now, when Chitterby was here, what did he do? He came and sat down here, and then he realized he wasn't getting any attention. So he got up and he walked around. And he showed off his jacket and he showed himself off. And he says, aren't I wonderful? Aren't I wonderful? And we all had to acknowledge him and recognize him. And when he had the attention he wanted, then he went off and played with his friends. But you see, we all do that to a degree. You say, Herb, I didn't notice that. Oh, yes, you did. But you're so accustomed to it, you didn't pay attention to it. You're so accustomed to things, you are not listening. Start listening. Because every single one in this room, every single one of you is a candidate for the School of the Master, is a candidate for a 3-month program on campus where magnificent things happen. And each one of them is fantastic. Do you know, everyone who came to campus, I don't do this every time for every master's program, but at this last one we had, everyone who came on campus was given a beautiful, very, very, very expensive guitar. And then each one was trained in the use of the guitar. And after they left, only two of them were playing the guitar. And others left their guitar behind. Now, doesn't that show you something? They didn't take the gift that it had for them and use it. What is the gift of learning how to play the guitar or the piano or anything else? What's the gift? Discipline. Just discipline. You put your fingers on the various keys and you flick it and you do this and you do that and you run your hand up and down and make all sorts of harmonious, beautiful music. Discipline. I gave them a special electronic tuning device. I gave them a special picks. I gave them a special case, a beautiful case. And they didn't use it. They didn't use it because they didn't have an inspiration for it. But I felt that one they had to get for themselves. I gave them inspiration and other things. But you see, when I say that each of you is a good candidate for that at such time as you choose to do it, it's expensive, and you might not want to spend money that way. But it is so fantastic because each person who comes to that goes away disciplined, because I won't tolerate non-disciplined. If they do silly things, I'll make a point of them. As you know, I do with you. And I'm not doing it because I don't like you. I do it because I absolutely love you. And I know that you have the capacity to do it in a fantastic way. And I want you to do it in a fantastic way. But if you don't, then you're the loser, not me. And everybody around you is the loser because they've had a loser in their midst. So everyone around you can also say, he's a genius, he's a genius, he's a genius, until you get him to believing it too. But that makes you believe it too. Makes you create it that way. Interesting stuff, isn't it? My goodness, lesson 14, what are we doing there? Stem cells work purely by directional alone. We talked a lot about that, and we'll talk a little more about it. So, with that, we'll take our pause, I presume. Are we doing it about the right time?
Yes.
Okay. So, let's see, when are we supposed to be? We're supposed to be back at the feeding trough at 10:30. So, you got 10 minutes. Enjoy. We'll see you.